So I'm, if I haven't told you already, I'm newly employed at the Munster Literature Center, so I might be making an appearance here or there. So I'm going to be pouring wine at this book launch, where it's basically a book of half translations of French songs that are very poetic in themselves. There's a lot of crossover with French songwriters. It's more like poetry. And I was reading through the book, and this one struck me particularly personally. And I'm going to butcher the French version because I haven't really studied it for a long time. But if you come on Wednesday, it'll be much better for your ears. because people who actually can speak French properly will be reading it there. So first in French and then in English. Okay. It's by a songwriter called Jacques Bertin. Je ne donne que l'amitié dans le beau café de la tête. Les mots sonnent jamais si simples que la table avec les fruits pour les enfants. Les mots sonnent jamais debout, même l'orgueil et la tristesse. Je ne vénère personne, ni rien des mots, ma pauvre chanson. Comme vous, j'ai cette haine des frappes et des aiguilles. Comme vous, j'ai la honte de ce monde au ventre, au creux de reine. Mais ce mot, liberté, que vous peignez sur vos visages, ce mot brandi à la volée sorti du sac avec les masques, oh, ne fait pas de bruit dans l'escalier, et dites ce mot à mi-voix. Dites-le, mais tu vas de le mouvement, comme une allumette qu'on protège du vent, comme on parle d'un frère unique et fragile qu'on a perdu. Dites-le, mot la liberté, comme on se parle pour soi seul. Dites-le, mais en dedans imperceptiblement, pris dans la rue, partout, vivez dans la pudeur et la force, le tonnement d'un deuil. In the English, which I can pronounce only slightly better. Because I'm hanging. Okay. I give only friendship in the head's broken bowl. Words are never so simple as a table with the fruit for children. Words are never upstanding, even pride and sorrow. I venerate no person, no thing, not my words, my own song. Like you, I have this hatred of flags and of churches. Like you, I have the shame of this world and the small of my back and my belly. But this word, freedom, which you paint on your faces, this word brandished randomly, pulled out of the bag with no mask. Hey, make noise in the stairwell and say this word under your breath. Say it, but musically with sorrow, like a lighted match cupped against the wind. As you speak of a frail, only brother you have lost, say this word, freedom. As you would speak for yourself alone, say it, but with imperceptibly. Then in the street, everywhere, live out in modesty and in strength. The astonishment of the bereaved. Thanks.
Next up we have Carol.
Yeah.
There he is.
Thanks,
Carol.
Happy evening, man. It's okay. I'm just doing one. I just keep all my poems together in one book. So. Okay, this is just a little thing about people's obsession with the whole celebrity thing. It's called the Celebrity Queen. Whatever I'm going to be, what will I do? Will I be on TV, looked at from every angle with a TV crew, upside down, spinning around, I'll do anything just to make me a star. Anything goes, secret filming, I'll take off my clothes, makeup, artists, trailers, posters, calendars. I don't want to be a postman, he's done in the paper, then he wants to see him later, lying on the beach with my staple belly, my plastic tits, the mechanics to wank over. Pump up my lips, cover my face, remove my hair, show my new car, please make me a star. Beauty pageants, bulimia, ice cream, size zero girls with no waistline, rib cages and faded jeans. Expectations running high for Carrie's Queen, the promised land to an Apnea car park, unprotected section, the back of a Ford Cortina. Pregnant at 17, karaoke dreams collapse in a heap. The TV made us believe for £2 a bit. Please ask the person who pays the bill, please. No answers on a postcard anymore. No 15 minutes, no flash forms, no limos, just discount caps. No red carpets, just wine stains. Karaoke queen downs another white wine and soda. Hits the dance floor, pretends she's bloody Spears. She closes her eyes. She can hear the crowd. Normality falls like gangrene. Another dream rolls out of oxygen and drops off. Society's abnormal expectations claim another victim. Thank you.
Quite short. It's for somebody I met who was interested in writing and she was carried off by cancer. It's called A Child of Nature, in memoriam for Mona Rose Brennan. Mona Rose was mist rising at dawn, a pattern of raindrops on a web, bluebells half hidden among swaying grass, a delicate, unblemished drift of snow, water reflecting diamond points of light, brush of the swallow's wing, breath of the forest floor, a broken flower borne off by the wind.
Okay, next we have Joe Orshaw's and Mayor's. Joe Sweeney. Thank you. I'm going to read a little bit more from this this book I'm writing. It takes the form of a series of letters from a teacher, Maeve Gonal, and she writes them to the principal. And this recounts an episode when the inspector visits her class. It's a chaotic school and she's rather not suited to this vigorous way of life. Dear principal, I have had my first visit from the inspector. It was during an English class with 3M. Remember them third year metalwork, the ones who manufactured the knives? Very creative, much indeed. Well, as soon as the inspector entered the classroom and took his chair and sat at the back, the fun started. There were comments from around the class such as, late starter, are you? Bit slow, are you? Trying to get the junior there since 68, is it? Not quite cracked it yet, have you? Oh, well, never mind. If at first you don't succeed in all that. At this stage, he told them to sit down. And Moira Hennessy did. She sat on his lap. I've always wanted a sugar daddy, she said. At this point, the inspector leaped up in outrage, glaring at them. Then he glared at me, as if I was the one who had sat on his lap, as if I was to blame. His hands were shaking. I just shrugged helplessly at him as much as to say, well, what do you expect me to do, tough guy? I'm just a helpless woman, a maiden in distress, so to speak. Well, I eventually made a show of ushering the children back to their seats. They had all gathered round him as if he was a circus attraction, you know, a rare animal, an endangered species, so to speak, which I think might have been right. There's a distinct feeling of danger in the class. Anyway, as soon as I scattered the hyenas back to their seats, the class went relatively well. The children actually listened when I read the poem and made an attempt to answer my questions. In this sense, there was an air of total unreality in the class. I must confess, their sudden silence made me feel nervous. I'm not used to getting this kind of attention from them. The sound of my own voice was even strange. Usually I can't hear myself in class, just the incessant babble around me. The fact of actually being listened to was unnerving. I was actually getting self-conscious, which is very different from being semi-conscious, which is what I usually am. It's the only way to survive in the ghetto. Dull your senses. It's a strategy I've developed which enables me to remain oblivious to the worst excesses of Saint Ghetto High. Now, one of the pupils was deliberately playing up. However, knowing the inspector was at the back of the room and that I couldn't reproach her as vigorously as I would usually have done, she kept tormenting me with the question, "Miss, how did Woolworths know there were 10,000 daffodils, Miss?" And then, "Do you think he counted them, Miss Eagle? Do you?" I was just about to tell her that she could count for a lucky star as the inspector was there. I'd fetch her a cuff on the ear and that would set it ringing like she thinks she'd been at a rave the night before. And she could count on that. I stopped myself in time. "Dignity, Maeve," I said to myself. "Always dignity." Anyway, I would never resort to physical violence. I faint at the sight of blood, especially my own. Besides, I know there are lawyers out there who go down on their knees and pray fervently every morning. "Today, dear Lord, let one teacher somewhere crack just one and make me money." Apart from this provocation, things went relatively smoothly, and I can confirm that the inspector got out of the classroom alive. It was a close call, however, as he made the mistake of trying to leave the class at the same time as the pupils. Unfamiliar with their little ways, you see, he didn't realize that they all launched themselves at the doorway at the same time, all being anxious to get out as quickly as possible. The result, as you can imagine, is that no one manages to get out at all, not for a long time anyway. What happens is they all get caught in a kind of a time warp. They turn into an impenetrable blob that just sways back and forth for several seconds until eventually the boy who is nearest the doorway hops out through the force of compression, you understand. Now, unfortunately, the inspector, who I suspect was anxious himself to be out of the class as quickly as possible in an effort to avoid contact with what he clearly considered were little monsters, he got caught right in the centre of the melee. It was disaster itself. I was still at my desk, totally engrossed in organizing my books, as you can imagine, being fully aware of the departure methods prepared by my young charges. I understand full well, you see, why they are called charges. Charging is their forte. In any case, all's well that ends well, and on my way out, I helped the inspector to his feet. He was a little asphyxiated, but that was only to be expected after what he had been through. I think it's a miracle he's still alive, frankly. Darwin would be glad anyway, an endangered species lives to fight another day. We'll fill you in on any further developments, principal, with the inspector. Till then, I remain your fervent pedagogue, May.
Next up we have Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Dave. That bleak night he spent in Rathdoff, at poker he never could bluff. At dawn he threw down, "Okay, I leave town. Why should I just roll up my cuff?" And for all the hard-working enumerators this time of the year again. For 12 months he hid in Lixnaw, the hermit who nobody saw. This is so senseless. This is the census. It's merely complying with the law. Speed ramps. Cheap tires on the road, on three wheels or four. When least we expect to hit high-speed bumps, move down to the floor may cost you much more. What's that underneath? All black streaks now pour from that rocket's tear as you squash your sump. Keep tires on the road on three wheels or four. Hot flaming tongues from exhausted box roar. Compacted seat springs rebound on your rump. Move down to the floor may cost you much more. Teams of slow coaches you passed by the score. a take-off for each low ego at high jump. Keep tyres on the road on three wheels or four. Pile up of danger is speed you can't lower. End crushed into shape of one tiny clump. Boot down to the floor may cost you much more. Advising cautions, not merely folklore. Don't mistake it for that hot air to repump. All tyres on the road on three wheels or four. Boot down to the floor may cost you much more. There was an old man in Ringsend. This diary his missus had penned. A lover with style goes that extra mile. So far, I don't have to pretend. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a reminder to you about the clock and its tequila. So next up, we have James Foley.
Once described as a prince among men, a prince among men, but this poem, I don't really, I didn't like that way, but it was an old friend that we wrote art, but here it is. Now I pass you on the street, as if we'd never met before. When I see you in the city, I don't talk, I just ignore. I find it hard not to look down on you and feel up a pity. What good would that do you? None. Makes me an asshole acting shitty. I promise myself I will talk to you. Say hello, go for a coffee. Each time I see you, I hold back, let you pass, let me know some more memories. Maybe it's your flat above the office. I know you've warmth inside you, you're Roman and you like to be embraced. Or look, you have a man who sees your goodness, not just these 6 minutes. The last night in 99 in the Grove, I sat alongside a girl. I suppose I was trying to kiss her. Well, I don't think she was that into me. We talked a bit, but I'd love to see her sister. I talked enthusiastically about you, asked where you were at and what, how were you. I may have freaked out of this, I suppose I might should too. Then by chance, some other night in the following year, I met you sitting on the ground outside that club you had so dear. I remember one of those Wednesday nights you'd make me come along, especially that next night after the Oasis concert was on. Now you sat there 4 years on, with more life tests come true. I stopped and talked to her, you seemed happy, you didn't seem blue. You said you were off the drink, and you looked in a healthy state. Again, I'm a trick for being surprised with this, you I always seem to relegate. At that time, I thought it long since we were friends and true. And yes, it's both of us as well, but now it's quadruple. The first year we had, I recall now, one promise you asked me. You said, James, if we can remain friends, lovers we can never be. At the time, even though I didn't say it, I didn't agree with that. Well, you know, I'm going to write this down. I see it was very smart. So again today, I'll reconsider and make another vow that if our paths should cross again in the streets, my face, I will not vote. Saturday, late day, sunny everywhere, it's quite pleasant that day. I travel easy to the simple state. Music on, game and shoes, the melodic song. Figure out flukes swimming down, cup of tea, icing down, resting easy in the simple state. Standing up, game and perch up, I have to go, grass needs to cut. Leave me here, not in a rush. Happy here, in the simple state.
Wager on the dead shivering tooth of a lost time.
and then go on your church to watch his boss. The crown of whipped ups and downs will go up right in her cap, and her house will be seen. Seen enough before seen, and why carry on before us. For now, where's her drinks? To the dead and the living, and her absence who cannot find direction, hope and sunlight. For we are blind and we cannot feel the future on their search. Thank you.
Hello, this is Bum about a fan of a guy called Efron Svensson. He was a jazz piano player from Sweden, and he drowned last year in a scuba diving accident, and this is a poem about meeting a ghost in my kitchen. It's called A Lament for Efron Svensson. Play me something, though you're not really here. The rain tattooing the kitchen window like a snare. And the wind, the whirling wind, droning like the bass on Tuesday Wonderland. The heating creaking in the key of A. The fridge voicing the same two notes in perpetuity. I'm improvising here for a continent. Give me a break. I'll pour us both a finger of Knob Creek. Though you're not really here, play me something. A slow progression on my flatmate D-Dot Casio. Then your fingers jerking like mad crabs across the keyboard. Or don't play, it's up to you, but play. For there's no one but me here in the lamplight. Or at least tell me what eternity is like. If it's a never-closing club called a hereafter. Dead greats in the rhythm section. You tinkling like the laughter of 16-year-olds on a beach in late July. Perfect table service boozing. Our dying translates us into the conditioning of music. Makes us weightless, melodious, floating bars of thought. Uploaded like data into the mind of God. Okay, fine. Let's not talk of prematurity in jazz, but just listen to the silk rain fizz upon the rain, that water falls the steps, test strains and stroke the bevelled slope of River Lane. As we name the two late unnamed albums, Fractal Birds, Jessica's Premises, E.S. Aum. Your fan club will only hear in overhearing or in dreams. And I won't bullshit you in the sweep of things, your trio intricacies, your carefully sequenced records will endure, no longer than the muttering gap between main set and encore, no longer than it took the final chords to flow, like a receding wave back into the piano, when we played late and cranky in the opera house, unsound-checked, your sampler or whatever on the fritz. This whiskey bottle's empty as your glass. I wouldn't bring this matter up unless. Though you're not really here, it's time to go. It's easing off outside, I think. I'm sorry. You know I'm sorry, but it's time. That traffic and raw light spills through the curtain gap. It's easing. Thank you, and good night.
Christopher Collins.
I get away with just two quick ones, yes. Yeah.
I have this first one called Upon Awakening. I wake when morning comes, this night holds me in slumber. Numb to the needle, I hear only laughter. Beyond the rapid eye movement, pupils remain still in anticipation. The cliff erodes the sky, ripping clouds to shreds. The sky has fallen, twisted the double helix back into line. A rich aroma of poor surroundings melting into the pot of gold, belonging no longer to the rainbow, but to the heathens and their joyful hordes. This is called History Case Study. Cast me a line, the game has been finished. Light crystals drip into my eyes, darkness ensues with last purpose. Horse kicked to the ground, left to pick it up once again, both legs broken, no third time with its charm. Lifeline disconnected, restrictive words are all that flow. The resolute dawn speckles dust with stars as smiles meet the dying shadows. The fact of the matter is not a matter of fact. Livid deviants expel their truant tendencies, while lost ranges encompass the slight consistencies which dwell in the midst of the unbearable ether. We must make sure to point out the breakwater waves, crest fallen and chest beating, pinned out arms crucified with integrity. Open armed invaders do not upset the status quo. Thank you.
Now for the first time after the evening, we'll be able to make two cards for
you. Now, I've always been fascinated by key diving and postal keys, known for chanting formally. This is the form of the Don title. Jutayama, Littoral Key, Slovenia, 1991. At noon, hand in hand, we face the water. With bated breath, the green one waits, our virgin plunge. Padded, dusty old, psychic eyes, palm flicker, laminaria kiss, and play on rubber flank. Fatal feeling in ice cold water, we loiter. Follow me, I beckon, follow me, and we glide deeper. Deeper. It's the poem in four parts. The puzzle, Postal Key, Orland, 1998. You, I, leaning on a pedium of cremated granite. Time lies moribund, a utopia, an illusion tendered, a glazed pillars of water. You, binding careful tendrils, and explore the torch wheels of my heart, unwinding, tick by tack. Our liminal moments gifted on the flaps of that swing I trace, cracks, gaps in the jagged boulder of the fingers trembled by your touch. As our shadows clean to nothingness, we drift, unaware to a shifting maneuver of fate. The Green Hole on the Coast of Kinsale, 2002. My name will play to you in many whispers as from my sound, gentle, soft. Hush, listen. Here the tenuous murmur steep, tugging at our restless feet. Here the hiss of foam, shingle, chatter on a broken shore. You, I, thundered, watch. Our shriveling wards die remorseless in the surf. Churned by the death of the promise, even our footprints are gone. I surface, weightless as the substance of our words. I leave no blemish on the waiting shore. Believe that, 2006. Tonight, I stand on the shore. At my feet, the river flows. Once in a while, I throw it a stone. I watch the river.
Next up, from Singapore, I believe, Eddie.
Just going to read from my second book. It's a long poem, but it's really made up of 15 shorter poems.
Alright.
I love it, but it was really... The flute loud between my ears will not cease. And when you will return, I do not know. Only that a sky swarming with hornets, infecting this universe of my body, had closed in for the kill. The moon is real as my heart, my love, but sometimes it is better to write off this matter with a smile. This is the real me. These are the four walls of my existence, pale, blessed, and green, where the seaweed they fished up with my body yesterday at sunset. I have been searching for you on the black riverbed by Boat Quay, among the yellow, red, and blue reflections of restaurants, pubs, and nightlife. Sometimes I think at the hour a flower blossoms quietly under a dark sky. There you emerge triumphant like an angel. Even without the body, I feel real as the moon that steals time from the night. From you, my evening star. Imagine me perched high above spaceless buildings, making love to you with words, hoping that you bear the fruit of my passion's thrust. Once more, my tongue is parched like wind from a mosquito, and once more, it is thirsty for the dark mind spilled upon the paper of your skin. So come, I will create for you a city furious in the night. Only do not look for me. I will not meet you at groups of town houses. You will not find me in faces of strangers you picked up from the street, in class, in the gym. You will see me only in the eyes of a lover who looks back at you. There, we will ride the high wind. Last one.
Well, 2 years ago at the height of the Celtic Tiger, there's a headline in the paper, the Examiner. And it was the cranes were up, and it was about sort of cranes up around the city. It meant that we were all going to go to heaven and we're going to make a park. And then what was saying was that the bankers, the insurance men, and the developers were going to make a fortune. And it was written by an auctioneer that I know actually. It's called The Cranes Are Up.
Okay.
The cranes are up, the cranes are up. How wonderful, how wonderful. For the people, they will be happy. Hear the bottles pop, take your sup. The cranes are up, the cranes are up. What a truly marvelous sight. All boats are lifted, all spirits too. Work all day until you drop. The cranes are up, the cranes are up, dancing up and down the mall. Milk and honey flows all round. Hold out your hand and fill your cup. The cranes have flown, the cranes have flown. What long legs they had, what long necks, what big eyes they had, what big bills. Who'd have known they'd leave? Who'd have known?
I had a really, really, really good poem written down, kind of written by a week, but it's changed all your lives and made rich people of all of you. Unfortunately, in the form of slump. Hold on, I'm quite a very quick 2 points in 3 minutes, simply by reading one very quickly and three parts of the I want to give up gambling and poker and the red. I want to pass the bank. morning chapter rushing into bed. I want to call the guards and tell them I'm feeding because I want to reassure them that now I'm finished feeding. I want to quit the door and assure them I want to spend the pay that money stored. I want to pack in porn and I want to chuck in pills and I want to have some money left so I can pay my bills. I want to give up clubbing, I want to get some rest and I want to call the doctor to rearrange my test. I want to quit the dark trap, I want early nights in bed, I want to drop the BBD and be the fucking state. I want to learn to smile and I want to cut my hair and I want to walk along the beach and breathe in some fresh air. I want to ring your dirty. I want to take up swimming and I want to be the kind of guy that doesn't frighten women. I want to help out charities. I want to pack my car. I want to pick my Hendrix and learn to play guitar. I want to take up yoga. I want to mind the scene because I want to play that yoga tree that isn't so obscene. I want to know what's going wrong and I want to do what's right and I want to be the bouncer who are looking for a fight. I want to join the GAA. I want to see a place that will remove me that graffiti. I apologize at least. I want to get in shape, I want to be sincere, I want to swap these blackheads for a skin that's fresh and clear. I want to quit white bread, I want to give up fries, but mostly what I want to do is give up young life.
Tears of nectar, never to be bead. Pollen will fall, find no seed. If there was no more frog, who the fuck was a princess frog? When the last bee bubbles were all stone. And if you like that poem, you can take it home, but you'll have to plant some flowers on your way, if that's okay.
That'd be the sunburnt and history, that's possible.
Yeah.
That's good up there?
Yeah,
okay. You're being caught. I think so, anyway.
And, quick story then. Professional, this is a story called Adam's Story, biblical. Those of you non-religious will forgive me for this. Adam's Story. When Adam was 920 years of age or thereabouts, it dawned on him that his eyes were growing weaker, his voice was failing, his bones were creaking, and arthritis was setting into his joints. He began to notice that the birds of the air died, and the beasts of the field, and every living thing that walked upon the earth, and he thought that such a death might come his way also. His children often came to visit him, and their children, and their children's children, and their seed and breed and generations. There was nothing he enjoyed more than telling them stories, because stories at that time were young and new and had not been heard before. "But what about the snake? Tell us that one," said Tuffet, who was a bit of a hard man. "I always liked that one." "No, something more personal," said Ruthie, "like the way you met your wife, how it was for you, the first time ever, and that kind of stuff. I have to hear this again." "Forget it," said Harum. "Do you want the apple? I want the apple." "It wasn't an apple anyway, you twit, it was a pear. An orange, a fig, a pomegranate." Adam had forgotten the details by now, it was such a long time ago, and he nearly believed his own version. But there was one thing he hadn't forgotten, and it welled up at him like a lump in his throat. He had to get it off his chest to set the record straight. "Look," he said, "it was like this. There was no apple. In fact, there was no fruit at all. Well, of course, there were olives and cherries and berries and lemons, and grapefruit and plums and nuts and bananas and groves for which we have no name yet. But none of them were forbidden. There was no forbidden fruit. We could eat them all." There was a great silence that was only broken by a groan from far off, which was like unto a myth slowly dying. "And a tree in the middle of the garden?" asked somebody tentatively. "There were many trees in the middle of the garden, whatever that was." "And a snake?" someone else tried. "No snake either. Or if there was, it was just as friendly as every other animal." "And God? He never chucked us out of the garden. We left ourselves voluntarily." Some of the older offspring began to get a little angry, not just because they had to swallow this stuff for hundreds of years, but because they had to earn their bread by the sweat of their brow. They looked down at their calloused hands and at scars and cracks and warts and weals, and they felt more deeply the pain in their lower backs. okay, let's get this straight once and for all, said Alain Bibic, who appeared to have the makings of a good committee chairman. Do I take it that you are saying is that yourself and your great-great-great-great-great, etc. grandmother were living together in this fabulous garden, that you would sweet Fanny Adam to do except to frolic beneath the trees, no stroke of work to do, food and sweet substance dripping from the trees, the beasts of the world, your slaves and servants, and then one fine day you just fucked up and fucked off out of paradise, leaving it all behind you. That's about it in one go, said Adam, with a certain relief now the truth was out. And why were you so dumbass stupid to leave the garden of paradise, to leave all that behind you, asked most of them in chorus. Because it was boring, of course, said Adam. Boring, boring, fucking boring.
Thank you.